Welcome to another edition of the Armchair Directors, where each episode we take a look at one of cinema's great directors and their essential films. This week on the show, we got something a little bit special for you. If you remember last year, we did a 2016 in review of all the films we saw this year, so now 2017 has passed and we're going to be doing that again. But this time, along with Professor Dutter, I have also have Professor Westhaver. So Professor Dutter, Professor Westhaver, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you very much.
All right, so we'll have this will be pretty freeform. So right off the bat, is there any movie like you just really, really, really want to talk about like right now, like right off the bat?
Why don't Marie start?
Okay, well, have both of you seen Loving Vincent?
No, I haven't.
Yes.
Oh, absolutely.
Oh my
magnificent.
God, that movie is so beautiful.
It actually, I think, should be in the nominations for Best Picture. It's sort of in the ghetto there under animated film. But it's really moved the needle in what, you know, you can do with film. I just think it was so incredibly well done and fun to look at.
It's gorgeous. And did you know it took him 7 years to make that?
Yes, and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of individual paintings.
That's even more than Boyhood.
So
it's absolutely a visual feast, and it's also kind of interesting because usually when we think of Vincent Van Gogh, we go, okay, yeah, the guy that cut off his ear. But as far as like what happened to him and how he died, it's so far back in my memory I can't remember. So the movie not only ends up being absolutely gorgeous, but it's kind of an interesting like detective story.
Yes.
Oh,
it is. Yeah, it solves a little bit of a mystery. But what's also great is if you're familiar with his artwork at all, there's all these little bursts where suddenly you see the painting, you know, and then it moves. So
yeah.
That recognition makes that, if you like his paintings at all, really cool. And I was watching it with my daughter and I said, so this is like being at a concert where, you know, somebody's always yelling Freebird. They're just waiting for the one hit, right? So I was like, they're eventually got to be building to Starry Night, which they did.
Right. Yeah.
I'll be sure to keep my ears out for that one. Sorry, I had to make
that
joke.
Well,
you're right. You have these little moments while you're watching it where you just go, oh.
Yeah.
Oh. Oh, and it's just it's really gorgeous. So yeah, I understand why you called animated feature the ghetto. And what's going to be even more ghetto is nobody's going to be Coco. There's just no way.
There is no way. There's no
but
way.
Okay. That I wish more people could see Loving Vincent, cuz it's truly something that it kind of reminded me a little bit with Waltz with Bashir, because it's obvious that they shot all those scenes and then did the layovers with the paint. In the same way that they did the animations for Waltz with Bashir and stuff like A Scanner Darkly. But it's really, really different and challenging, and I'm so glad I got to see it.
You know, it may be a dark horse in that they may decide that Pixar's had enough love and that it's time to actually recognize that somebody did something unique with animation. So that it could edge it out, but the rest of the nominees for
Boss Baby looks really good.
You know, my students in animated film that semester loved it, but I don't know what that is doing on the list, and I haven't seen Ferdinand.
No. Yeah, and another thing too, given what you're seeing with how much diversity has been added into the Academy, it's going to be very difficult to beat Coco just on a diversity level, not just a Pixar level, because I get what you're saying about, okay, it's like every time Pixar puts up something, we're giving it to it. But because diversity is really pushing what's going on with this year's Oscars, I think it would be really hard for them to nominate or to give it to something that's not centered on diversity.
Well, I absolutely loved Coco, and I would be fine with it winning. It's
me too.
So well
Coco
done.
Coco was great.
Okay.
Did you see Coco?
No, I haven't. I'm feeling bad. I haven't seen these movies yet.
Bring a box of Kleenex. It's so and gorgeous. I mean, just in terms of the colors.
Okay. Now, one of the things I like to talk about, I think that really stands out for me this year, it was the quality of films that have came from A24 Studios. I've seen five films this year, and all of them, at the absolute worst, are pretty darn good. And that's the worst film in that of those five. So, Disaster Artist, which you already talked about, I talked about with Dutter, and I really like that. And the others, I have in most of them in my top ten. So, first one I talk about is A Ghost Story. Dutter, I know you like Red Letter Media. Did you see that they rated that as their favorite film of the year?
Yeah, I did, and I've actually got it at home waiting to watch it because they sold that so hard that I'm like, I've got to see that because those two guys are so persnickety. So
yeah, like whenever
it's waiting for me at home on Netflix, and I can't wait to watch it.
So I'm the only one who's seen it, or have you seen it, Professor Wester?
Which movie?
A Ghost Story.
No, just the title. You should have known. That's
okay. It is not like a horror movie or like a ghost story at all. So I'll try to sell it. So. It stars Casey Affleck and Rooney Mara.
All right, I'm in.
Okay. And it's sort of this story where it's this young couple in this house. And it's not a spoiler, but early on, Casey Affleck, the boyfriend, dies in a car accident. And so we go to the coroner's and they show the body. And then they put the sheet over it, and then all of a sudden he wakes up, and he's like, he's a ghost, but like in a child's ghost, so he's got the sheet and the little holes in the eyes. And so he goes back, he walks through this field or something, he goes back to the house where his girlfriend is, and it's the whole movie, he stays in that house, and it's just sort of this passage of time. He stays with the girlfriend, and even after the girlfriend leaves, and these other people, and it's a really moving movie, just how... you know, life moves on, just how you don't feel, it's like kind of insignificant you feel, because all these, once you're gone and, you know, these people have left, you are gone, you just feel lost. And it's just a lot of really heavy themes. It's a really short movie. It's not even like an hour and a half. And I had it in my top 10. I could put it as my number one movie. It's really great. That's one I want to throw in.
Is it anything like The Ghost of Mrs. Muir?
Not really, because nobody really knows that the ghost is there. He moves objects. He throws things. One character does know it, but there's no connection he makes to any of the real life people. But it's not like a ghost story, like ooh, anything like that. But that's a highly recommend for me.
Okay.
Have any of you seen The Florida Project?
I have not, but it is on my list.
Professor Dutter,
I haven't either, but I know it's supposed to be really good.
That's a really good movie. Now, I have to say the director's name is Sean Baker, and that's my dad's name, so that feels weird. But anyway, it's the most honest portrayal of, like, white trash you'll ever find in a movie.
Yeah, better than I, Tonya?
Even more than that. Like, the actress, they talk about how the actress who plays the mom in this movie, she's not, like, a professional actress. She had, like, this Instagram account where she posted all these strange videos. She posted this video about a day in her life. Apparently the director saw that. He emailed her an opportunity, like, hey, I'm doing this film. I like you for my lead. Would you want to do it? And that's how she got the role. And she's, like, of all the, like, when I saw the list of, because the list of Oscar nominees for Best Actress came out, I said, she should win, and she's not even nominated. Like, she was better than any of those performances, I can guarantee you, because that is the most, like, authentic portrayal of, like, white trash, like trailer trash in a movie I've ever seen. It almost feels like he just followed these people around with a camera. And she's really good. Willem Dafoe, he's nominated for Best Supporting Actor. He's amazing in this film. It's just some of the strongest performances of the year are in this movie. It has a dumb ending. Like, the last 2 minutes are kind of stupid, but everything else in this film is really good. Another strong recommend.
Okay.
All right, I feel bad because I was recommending all these movies and nobody else has seen them. But have you guys seen It Comes at Night?
No.
But
these all sound like horror films.
I like Joel Edgerton, so.
It's that another great movie. It's more, like you said, it's a horror movie, but it's more about paranoia, because the whole movie is about, it's during like this virus or something, but you don't see any zombies. But anyway, this family's holed up in this house in the middle of nowhere, and this one night this guy comes into this house, and the house trying to take some food because he didn't know anybody was in there, and so he says, well, I got family. Can I bring them over? And so he brings them over. But the whole movie, kind of paranoia and distrust between the families. And it leads to a very kind of bleak but really amazing ending. It's like the paranoia is just rich throughout the movie. Okay, so I talked about that. Disaster Artist, I mean, we talked about it already. I recommend it, especially if you like The Room, but I won't talk about it much anymore. Okay, so I think those are all the A24 movies, but of all...
No, Lady Bird is.
Oh, I haven't seen that one yet, but...
That is a terrific
movie. I've
seen
it.
Okay, tell us a little about Lady Bird.
I have seen it.
Okay, you guys can talk about it.
Absolutely love Laurie Metcalf. I like her anyway, but she was fantastic.
Yeah, she was good in it, yeah. But as far as... Here's the thing. I don't know why people are going so crazy about it. It's just another coming-of-age high school movie. And yeah, it focuses on the girl this time instead of the plethora of boy coming-of-age high school movies that we've seen. But nothing really knocked me over. And, you know, yeah, it's great that, you know, we're getting more diversity in Hollywood. But when they put Greta Gerwig up for Best Director, the whole time I'm sitting there going, what about Catherine Bigelow? What about Detroit? There was a lot more skill going on in that movie than what I saw in Lady Bird. So I honestly don't understand why everybody's just so in love with Lady Bird.
I think it's a Best New Act thing, if this was the Grammys.
For Saoirse Ronan? Yeah.
Well, no, for Greta Gerwig, because, I don't know that she did anything groundbreaking with this movie that hasn't been done before. But it is a way to say, hey, for, you know, your first really big movie, good job. Also, I think the movie has a slow burn. I think that's why people are going crazy for it. I think a lot of people have old Catholic skeletons in their dungeons, and I think they all have relationships with their mother that are, you've either been Laurie Metcalf or you've been the daughter or you've watched that happen, you know, sort of from a third party perspective. But that is so well drawn. And I think it's her story,
so
too.
So along those lines, it would be a good screenplay.
Yes, it is a much better screenplay nomination than it would be for Best Director. I agree.
Okay, I'll buy that. But, you know, I just don't think Catherine Bigelow has gotten enough props.
Okay, so you were talking about Catherine Bigelow, so obviously you must have seen Detroit this year?
I've seen parts of it. And I know that sounds weird that I'm pushing it so hard, but I've been a Catherine Bigelow fan for a really long time, and it just kind of bewildered me because...
Have you seen Detroit?
A lot of really good critical feedback on Detroit, but it almost seemed like it got completely lost at the box office.
I don't think Detroit...
It kind of goes back to what I think Marie was saying about coming in with the new, and, you know... Bigelow's been around for a while, you know. So, you know, Steven Spielberg's been around for a while. They didn't nominate him, but they did nominate Jordan Peele, which I'm totally fine with because Get Out is great. But
yes,
okay.
Again,
for your first movie
that really was meant to make a splash, that's what that recognition is, I think.
Right.
Yeah, I was watching a bit of Get Out because I watched it in the theaters, and then they're playing a lot on HBO now. And there's always these little things watching it the second time that I'm picking up, which you're picking up now that you've seen it already. Like one of the things I really noticed was when the dad is taking the guy through the house, he's talking about his mom. He's like, I always like to have a little piece of my, you know, parents somewhere. And then we see the maid. And you don't, first time you're not going to know what that is, first time seeing it, but the second time, like, oh, that's genius. There's these little things in the movie, these tiny little things he does. Like even the whole thing, which is you think is weird the first time you see it, but when the daughter is eating the Fruit Loops and then she's just slurping the milk and you don't like, what's that? But then you realize white and color separate.
Oh.
And it's just these little things. And I'm thinking that's like these little touches. And this is a guy, like I remember Jordan Peele when he was like on Mad TV doing all these goofy characters, even before he got big on the Key and Peele show. And it's weird that this guy who was known primarily for sketch comedy is like his first movie is this great horror film.
Well, I went to see Keanu about the gangster cat.
Which was him and Key and Peele.
Yeah, so I was really excited when I saw Get Out and saw that, you know, how much he has grown as a just envisioning a movie. Because Keanu could have been a much better movie than it was. And Get Out was terrific.
And just great performances all around. I think the Daniel Kaluuya, who was also in Sicario, he's got nominated. And I thought he was just great in this movie.
By the way, I'd like to mention in terms of Best Actress that I think Michelle Williams was completely shut out. Because she was on my top Best Actress nominees for All the Money in the World. She was very, very good in that.
I haven't seen that one yet.
She was good in that.
She's always
for
good.
For me, since there was so much of that movie where she's not around, where we're following other pieces of the puzzle, that I almost thought of it more as a supporting actress role than I did as a main actress role.
You know, when I was reading through who was nominated and I saw she wasn't an actress, I did go to look to see if she was in Best Supporting. You're right. Christopher Plummer, though, do you think that he really should be on that list, or is it just an amazing thing to have replaced Kevin Spacey?
Yeah, that's a really good question because, I mean, he was fine in it, but he didn't really blow me away.
Yeah.
I mean, the only thing about that movie, I if you're going to hand anything to anybody, Ridley Scott did something really Herculean, but and the pacing of that movie was great.
Like, yes.
There's a lot of true stories running around this year in the Oscar nominees, but that one on the whole, I wasn't really interested in the story itself. But watching the movie, it pulled me in because of how it was paced.
Yes.
And I really cared. Whereas when I was watching something like Darkest Hour or The Post, I'm like, you're losing me. So I got to hand it to Ridley Scott for the way he kept things so on track with that. But, Christopher Plummer, I'm like, I think they're just kind of giving him a nod just to say, you know, way to come in for the team or something along those lines. But, yeah, I don't necessarily think his performance was all that masterful.
Now, did you think that Spielberg deserved a nod for The Post? Because I found that movie had so much shaky cam.
I haven't seen the movie yet, but when I saw the trailers, like, this kind of looks like Bridge of Spies. This kind of looks like Lincoln. One of those, here's a very important movie that you'll probably have to watch in history class in high school at one point in your life. It looked okay, but I haven't seen it yet, but it just looks like another, it's fine, but I probably won't watch it ever again after the first time.
Well, Meryl Streep is good in it, as she always is, but I didn't know that I thought that this was her best performance ever either.
No.
Because I felt like pieces of Julie and Julia and Margaret Thatcher kept creeping in. What'd you think?
Yeah, especially with that hair.
Yeah, especially with the hair.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if it, at this point it's just default that if Streep is in something that you have to put her up for it. But
it is.
What did you think overall of the Post, Marie? Because I was pretty bored.
Well, I was fascinated because I love that kind of intrigue. I absolutely love any movie that's going to show me how you make something. So when they showed those scenes of the newspapers actually going through the machines, that to me is very exciting. And I thought that the portrayal, Tom Hanks's portrayal, he was fantastic as Ben Bradley. I was really impressed with that. But the shaky cam was really making me nauseous because I was in a full theater and it was kind of close to the front. So, you know, you're kind of looking up and...
Oh, okay.
Are there action scenes in the movie? I'm just surprised they have.
They're trying to make it look like it's very busy and fast-paced. So it's all this steady cam that's not steady. Moving camera.
It's mostly people talking in rooms.
Yeah.
And talking on the phone in rooms.
Which was Bridge of Spies. Yeah.
But I will say that I thought that...
Bridge of Spies had more going on.
Yeah, it did.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I did think that the wardrobe for Meryl Streep in The Post was superb.
Yeah, I mean the there's a couple of movies that were really excellent at capturing the period. Did you guys see Battle of the Sexes?
No.
No.
That's the one with Emma Stone and Steve.
Oh,
it was the tennis one. Right?
Yes.
Bobby Riggs and Billie Jean King.
Yeah.
That movie did such a great job of this is early 1970s. I mean, the costumes, the set designs, the colors they used down to the cards. I mean, it's just like, this was really, really well done.
Okay. You know, it's actually on my list of things to catch. I just didn't see it in the theater.
All right. Now, have you guys seen Blade Runner 2049?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
I was angry that it didn't get a Best Picture nomination or Best Director, as I was a huge fan of the original. I'm assuming we're all our fans
of
the original?
Yes, yes.
Oh, yeah.
I think this is as good or maybe even better than the original, and that's saying a lot. And it was, when I watched, when I first, this news of this was being, sequel was coming out, I was thinking, well, what Ridley Scott's doing with Prometheus and all the Alien movies, I was like, I'm not really excited for this. But when I saw Villeneuve was directing it, I was on board completely. Mm-hmm. And this is such a great movie. I have it on like my top 10.
Yeah, I definitely up there.
Yeah, I liked it too. But I think the interesting thing is going to be, I mean, what Roger Deakins did with that movie and what Roger Deakins has been doing with his entire career.
Yeah.
But at the same time, for cinematography, how do you beat Dunkirk?
I think Blade Runner has better cinematography than Dunkirk. I mean, just the way he incorporates the, you know, special effects in with, you know, just the cinematography is just amazing. There's just shots in there. Even in Dunkirk's amazing too. But it's
they were running around with IMAX cameras. They could only shoot for 2 minutes at a time. They built special things to put IMAX cameras in, like, period British fighters. I mean, the craziness of the shoot for Dunkirk is just out of control. Whereas with Blade Runner, you do have a lot of things going on in post-production with the special effects.
Okay,
it's gorgeous. It's an absolutely gorgeous movie. It's stunning.
But I think the Darkest Hour is actually a better movie about that time period.
Right, but what did you think about the cinematography in it?
Well, cinematography, definitely Dunkirk.
I think with Dunkirk, I wondered about this because it seems a lot. I was kind of, when I was doing some research on Dunkirk, there are a lot of people who are now coming out and saying that this movie's overrated and it's terrible because you can't connect to the characters. Did that bother any of you with that movie? Because this whole movie is just about, here's this situation, here are these people, and they got to get off this beach. It's a survival scenario. And I think we don't need another war movie where people are sitting around a fire talking about their family or their wives or girlfriends at home. We know this situation. We can, even by looking at the casting, like, these are kids. These look like they're probably, a lot of them are like 18, 19-year-olds. That's enough where we're like, I just want to see them get out of this. It's like, almost feels like a horror movie for this movie, because I felt a lot of anxiety just watching it. You feel clenched, just like, get off this island.
But see, to me, the best story was the side story of the guy on the boat, Mark Rylance.
Oh yeah.
Speaking of Bridge of Spies,
and even with that story, there is a little bit of characterization with that guy, because he's knowing all these things about the fighters. Like, how do you know that? It's like, well, my son was it was a fighter pilot, and he just got shot down in a battle. So do you guys like this movie a lot?
Dunkirk?
Yeah,
Dunkirk. I don't see it so much as a movie as it is an experience. Like, if I really wanted to know what it was like to be on that beach with the sound design that they had, with the cinematography that they had, because you're right, this is not a character-driven movie, even though you have amazing actors in it. And I think I joked with you before, Alex, about how much I love Tom Hardy, and literally you could have had anyone be in that big mask and goggles, and it would not have mattered. So you've got Kenneth Branagh running around. You've got really good, you know, quality actors, but it's really not character-driven. It's just about, like you said, the situation. But it shows that situation so masterfully that
exactly.
I was completely spellbound by it.
I watched Dunkirk in IMAX just for the sound, and I thought the sound was amazing. I also had an assignment for my students if they went to see Blade Runner 2049 to focus on the sound. But my pick for sound editing is Baby Driver.
Oh, yeah.
In fact, all editing should go to Baby Driver.
That's another film I was talking about, Get Out, where you just watch it again, and you pick up on things you didn't notice the first time. I was watching that opening scene, not the robbery scene, but the scene when he's walking around getting the coffee, and they're playing
that scene.
And that's the playing their song. And I didn't notice the first time, but they're like, with the lyrics and everything, you can see it on the graffiti and the walls, and even the parts where he's like playing the air trumpet and it's going right now. I mean, it's the amount of, like, all this, while it's one take, done in one take, is just brilliant. That's Edgar Wright at his best for me.
And there's so many details in that. Speaking of mise en scène, with the when you go to the apartment where his foster dad is living, and it's been ransacked, all of the records that are laying around are all from music in the movie.
Yeah, exactly. And it's just if there's, like, they don't nominate best soundtracks, but this would be the best soundtrack of the year for me, just because the way he.
Oh no! Best soundtrack is Phantom Thread.
Oh, well, see, I haven't seen that yet.
No. Well, I mean, like, soundtrack, not a score, but a soundtrack, just pre-existing music.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah, that was a good soundtrack.
It was a good soundtrack.
Okay. You were talking a little bit about Kenneth Branagh, so I'm following threads here. No pun intended, but I'm following threads here. One movie, it's sort of kind of gotten meh reviews, but I enjoyed it overall, was A Murderer on the Orient Express.
I liked that movie.
Have you seen it?
There should be a special award just for the mustache.
Yeah, the Kenneth Branagh's mustache is epic. Somebody said it looks like he cut off two squirrels' tails and pasted them to his head. But because I just read the book before the movie came out, and he follows it very faithfully. And I think overall he does a lot of interesting directing. Like the scene I liked most was when they first find the body. It's all shot from this god's eye point of view.
Okay, no spoilers, because I still haven't seen it yet.
Oh, well, it's a murder mystery, so no.
Somebody's murdered on the Orient Express.
Yeah, so that's not a spoiler. But it's not a masterpiece, but I think it's a very well-done, enjoyable film. And I'm surprised that people were just sort of, it's okay on it.
How was Johnny Depp in it?
Great.
Yeah, he was okay. He doesn't really do much.
He's that kind of hard-to-read Johnny Depp character.
Mm-hmm. Ah, okay.
In his more arty movies.
Kenneth Branagh, I thought, was great as Hercule Poirot.
Yes.
And that's a character that's been done so many times in movies. I think he brought his own little uniqueness to it.
Yeah, and I think that's because he's done so much Shakespeare. He knows how to take something that people consider sacred and then, treat it with respect. Because he is Poirot.
And good news is, because this movie was a big hit at the box office, they're going to make a Death on the Nile. So
yes.
I'm looking forward to that one, too.
Actually, that's the final scene when he gets off the train in Egypt. Yeah. They said, well, you're needed. There's
been
a death on the Nile.
On the Nile. Okay, so I was talking a little bit earlier about A24, so I'm assuming you guys probably haven't seen this one yet. But have any of you seen Good Time with Robert Pattinson?
No, but it's in my Netflix queue. That's a really good movie, too.
I'm spoiling it, but this was my number one favorite film of the year for as far as my top 10.
Wow.
Really?
I'll give you a little bit of the story. It's a night. It's basically one of those movies where it just follows a night in somebody's life. It's just gone horrible, so it's not a good time. But this guy, Robert Pattinson, is like this sleazy criminal, and but he also takes care of his brother who has special needs, and he drags his brother along in this robbery at the beginning, and so. They get the robbery, it's a success, but then when the cop pulls by and starts talking to them, and the brother freaks out and starts running, they both run. They go in depredation, so Robert Pattinson escapes, but his brother is arrested by the police, and he's taken into Rikers. We see a little bit what's going on in Rikers. There's these fights going on. They're picking on the guy. And so Robert Pattinson has to spend the whole night trying to get $10,000 bail to get him out of prison. And so the whole night he's trying to find a way to come up with $10,000, and it's just sort of his descent, just because it just gets worse and worse throughout the movie. It's a great film. The Safdie brothers, I'm not sure if you're familiar with them. They're kind of they directed it, and one of the brothers plays the mentally challenged brother in the movie. And highly recommended. Great performance by Robert Pattinson. If you have any qualms because he did Twilight a long time ago.
Did you see The Lost City of, and I'm not British, so I'll say Z instead of Z?
I haven't seen that, but I really want to see it.
I'm
creating this long list of stuff I haven't seen.
But yeah, that's a highly recommend.
I mean, that movie was really good too. It was a total throwback to like those epic adventures, kind of Indiana Jones-ish. Such a large period of time, and you because I don't remember the guy that was in King Arthur.
Charlie Hunnam.
Did any of us see King Arthur?
No, I didn't. I heard I'm not missing much.
Yeah, that's what I've heard too. But I mean, everybody in it is really good, and you get this sort of, National Geographic kind of how things started out with exploration and this guy going into the Amazon and hearing about this lost city and how even though he goes down there several times, he gets through World War I. And tries to go down there again. He's just never able to find it. And it's really good. If you get a chance,
yeah,
I would recommend seeing that.
It's
a nice movie.
All right.
By the way, in terms of great soundtracks, like if you could just have all the music and judge it on that, I, Tonya had.
I've really wanted to see that movie,
and
too.
It has great music if you remember that era.
Which one was it?
I, Tonya. What was? I haven't seen it, but I remember seeing the trailer for it.
I haven't seen it either.
But oh my God, it is so good.
All I hear is that it's just full of people abusing her.
Well, yes, that is definitely part of the story. I saw this in a packed theater. I was not expecting that many people to be interested in. But most of the people were in line with me when we were buying tickets. We were all a little ashamed that we were going to see this movie. So when we walked in, I was surprised that it was so full. Because it's a sleazy story. It really is.
When I saw the trailer for it, it looked like it was kind of like a Martin Scorsese movie, which really intrigued me. Kind of like a Goodfellas.
What I thought really worked about it is how dark it is, because it kind of shows all the facts you already knew if you ever followed the story. But it also lets her have a... You know, you get more of a nuanced, you know, why she is the way she is. And it's parts of it are just bitingly funny. And Allison Janney as her mother, if she doesn't get Best Supporting Actress, there is no something's wrong with the world, because she is magnificent as the mother.
I hear she's like the worst mother in the world.
Worst mother ever. But it also gives you like a glimpse behind the scenes at the Olympics, which I think everybody thinks is interesting, which I saw
and
a little bit also.
It's Olympic season right now.
In Molly's Game.
Okay.
Oh, I loved that movie.
Yes.
That's my number three.
I was surprised how much I liked that, especially how long it was. But in that movie, she's a skier, and she was... at the qualifying, wasn't it? The qualifying. And then she wrecks, and that's the end of that. So in her voiceover, she's saying, they say that the worst thing that can happen is to come in fourth at the Olympics. And then she, you know, basically has something to say about that. But then you watch I, Tonya, and you see Tonya Harding come in fourth. It's a great contrast, because she goes back to her life and then just goes right back to working as a waitress. You don't realize that people's lives are so. If you don't win, you get nothing.
Right.
They even say something.
If you're in Molly's Game, you start a poker game.
Yes. Or you start a poker game. I think they mentioned in that one.
Did you like Molly's Game?
I loved Molly's Game.
I haven't seen that one.
It was much better than I thought it would be. I was very, very
entertained. What did you think of Sorkin's directing?
I thought it was great. What did you think?
I thought he definitely was hanging around the set of The Big Short. Some of the editing and cutting and kind of the snappiness of it. I mean, that's already Sorkin dialogue anyways, but as far as like how it looked on screen. But it was refreshing to see a female character speak Sorkin. Because most of the time we just get
Sorkin.
Men speaking Sorkin. So it was nice to see. And I thought Jessica Chastain did a great job. I was really surprised that she wasn't up for Best Actress.
Me too. I thought she was really good in that.
She's usually good in
everything. Alex, put this on your list, because I know. It's great.
I've been wanting to see it.
And if you like poker at all, it's really interesting.
Okay. Let me think. I guess we could talk. There was 7 comic book movies that came out this year. Any ones you want to talk about? I would say the best one was Logan. Wonder Woman was okay. Everything else was like decent, but like those two. Any other combo movies you want to talk about?
My top pick for superhero movie would have been Wonder Woman.
Absolutely, you're wrong, Alex.
I know. See, okay. I don't think Wonder Woman's a bad movie. I like it. Overall, but the biggest problem I had with it, I know I talked with you a little bit about it, Dutter, but it's just the villain was terrible, and I think the whole ending, because the whole movie. It's like, especially the scene when she kills not the second guy, but the first guy who kind of snuffs like cocaine or something to make him stronger. She kills him, and then she's like, why isn't the war ended? I killed Ares. I thought the war was going to end. Pine was like, the world isn't as black and white as that. You can't just kill one guy and expect everything to end and everything. I thought, you know what? That's a good ending for the movie. She's realized she's still got to go on and end this war. Just because she killed one bad guy doesn't mean everything's going to stop. What happens?
But everything doesn't stop at the end of the movie. That's why she's like still staying on and tracking all these things all across the planet, and how she's you know, eventually hooking up with Batman and Superman and stuff. So the point is, no, even though you had that one little moment where, you know, people were shaking hands like it was Christmas, it doesn't stop. It just keeps going, because that is humanity, and that's the harsh reality of it.
But
that very ending part, I think, is the admission that no, not every war is not going to stop simply because she gets involved. And
but the war, but
bad guy.
But the World War One that did end when she killed Ares. So yeah, okay. So eventually, yeah, 30 years down the road, we get the Second World War, and we still get like Nam and Korea and everything else. Okay, but still, she kills the one bad guy, Ares, who I thought was just a really bad villain. And it seems like, well, that war has ended because she killed the bad guy. And that's the part I didn't, and because at the end, after she kills him, she's walking through, everybody's having the victory parade. And that was my biggest problem with the movie. Everything else was, I think, enjoyable. I think Gal Gadot is great as Wonder Woman. I think it's her and Chris Pine had great chemistry together. There's some cool mm-hmm. action scenes. There was a bit too much slow motion for me, but overall, good movie, but it's just that ending.
But it wasn't about ending World War One. It was about ending war. Period.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Capital W. So it's okay. It's that old, you know, you won the battle but lost the war thing. She won the battle, but the war, our warlike nature didn't change
right.
a jot. The one criticism I have about the movie is that in the beginning, when she's on the island full of Amazon women mm-hmm. and they're fighting, it's totally bloodless. You know, there's
well,
arrows
isn't it
flying and.
Movie?
I'm sorry?
Isn't it a PG-13?
Yeah, it's PG-13.
Well, still, I mean, yeah.
Well, maybe in that because they're like these Amazonian mm-hmm. goddesses, so maybe they don't bleed. I don't know.
Yeah, but the people they shot with arrows were men.
Yeah. And then Robin Wright Penn, she was one of the Amazonians. She saves Diana. She just gets shot by a bullet and then dies. So, okay, maybe I'll just shut up. But
no, I mean, maybe it's the PG thing. I hadn't considered that.
Yeah.
That might be the reason that they did that.
Okay.
But Logan bleeds, and that was rated R.
The Logan, this is one of my favorite comic book movies. If I could talk about it just a little bit, because
yes,
it's not only a comic book movie, but it's also a bit of a Western, I think.
Mm.
And not only because they reference Shane a lot, but it's just kind of the way the lawlessness of the land, and it's just this simple, you know, you have to take your law into your own hands, and nobody's going to help you but yourself. And I think it's just a good wrap-up for this character because, you know, there's been some good X-Men movies, there's been some terrible ones, but I think the way they let him go I thought was great. I thought Hugh Jackman should have been nominated for this role.
And not for The Greatest Showman?
No.
I liked The Greatest Showman. I was surprised all I got was like a song nomination.
Well, I haven't had a chance to see it yet, so I don't know. So can you tell us a little bit about it?
Well, it's meant to be about Barnum. So you get his backstory. You get all the, you know, early days of vaudeville, like how the circus was used to be a really viable form of entertainment. And given that they've just killed it off, I thought it was a great time to make a historical movie about it. Apparently they get all kinds of details wrong, but still, you get a sense of Barnum as a entertainer.
Yeah, I know that was one of the criticisms people had is because he did some pretty sketchy stuff mm-hmm. to his performers, and it seems like, oh, we're not going to talk about that. Here's a lot of song and dance routine.
They show it a tiny bit in the movie, how he sort of abandons them when it's important, but, you know, there's only so much you can do in 2 hours. Mm-hmm. They don't even mention him meeting the Ringling Brothers. So, I mean, it's not the end-all, be-all story of the guy, but I thought Hugh Jackman made a terrific character for that. You cannot not watch that man.
Oh, I know. He's mm-hmm. he's delicious.
And you know, but I about Wonder Woman, I was impressed with Chris Pine being able to be second banana.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I thought that was great. He was
yeah, just
supporting.
The whole movie, just them talking, I would have been just a great, insanely watchable just because they can, the way they're going back and forth with each other on the boat. It's like, mm-hmm. do you have that book with you, by the way? Just all that stuff. I was cracking up. I thought it was great. That stuff was great.
That stuff was great.
And even the whole stuff, like, are you considered an average man? And he goes, I'm above average. That stuff was cracking me up.
Yeah, the very witty dialogue.
Okay.
I want to ask a question.
Sure.
I first thing I always look for is the nominees for Best Foreign Film. And without fail, there's always at least one, two, three, or all that I haven't seen. And I haven't seen any of these movies. Have
Me
you
neither.
Seen them, Mary?
No, I haven't seen any of them. And I guess the one that won at the Golden Globes in The Fade completely locked out.
Really?
Wow.
Yeah, it's not in there.
It's so funny. There's usually... there's usually at least one or two that never even got, that were never even released around here. I don't recognize any of these movies. Like, even like, I knew that was out, but, you know, didn't see it. I don't remember these even being released here.
Okay.
I've heard of a Fantastic Woman because of the lead actress in it. She's apparently, like, really great in the movie, but all of the other ones, I'm at a loss. I have no idea. And every time I see The Square, I think of that Netflix documentary that came out a few years ago about the Arab Spring. And so every time I see that, I keep thinking Arab Spring, and it's a movie from Sweden. And I'm like, that's obviously not Arab Spring.
I guess it's a different movie.
Yeah.
Okay, so I actually want to talk about, what would you, each of you, say is your most underappreciated film of the year? Which do you think should get more? Either it's not getting enough recognition at the Oscars, or just never not enough recognition overall.
I'm going to go with The Big Sick. Because I really liked that movie, and I think people didn't go see the movie because the title was so weird.
I still haven't seen it yet.
It,
so I'm guilty.
Okay.
Just okay?
Yeah, I mean...
I thought Holly Hunter was so funny.
Okay. I don't know. I realize it's based on something that really happened in the main guy's life, and... Holly Hunter in it. I just adore Holly Hunter. She's so great. But something about it, I just really couldn't get into. It just seemed kind of like a rom-com with a certain situation that was put into it. So it didn't really do much for me. I think the funniest parts about it were when they were in the comedy club and all the comedians were kind of going at each other and you know, how they were preparing for things and how things were failing. That part I thought was kind of interesting, but the relationship part and the long drawn out stay at the hospital, I was like,
see, right. I ate that up with a spoon. I loved that movie. I thought it was so well written. I thought the relationship was so believable and freshly presented. I just thought it was terrific. But it's gotten just, I think it got a screenplay nomination, which is really where it belongs.
Yeah, I think you're right.
And Professor Dutter, what would you say is your favorite, most underseen or underrated of the year?
Well, if I say this, you're just going to just be angry because we've already talked about it, but I don't think Atomic Blonde should have got the hate that it did. I thought that movie was awesome.
I disagree. Have you seen it?
I haven't seen it.
Okay. It has some amazing action set pieces. I think the long take that was in the hallway, I thought that was great. But most of it's just kind of boring. It's just her, like we talked about the post where it's a lot of people sitting down and talking and having conversations. This whole movie is nothing but Charlize Theron walking in rooms and getting secret information from spies.
And the problem with that is what?
No, it's we've seen it before, and it's the whole, well, there's a mole. It's like every spy movie now, like, there's a mole in the organization.
That's fine. That doesn't bother me at all. And James McAvoy is in it. How can you not love that?
James McAvoy's good. I mean, there's not really any bad performances, but the movie was just, it was dull, and the whole, oh, there's a mole, it feels like nearly every other spy movie. And I could have used more.
It was Charlize Theron.
I know
she's got a point there.
Okay, Charlize Theron, and she has some great action scenes, but it just didn't do anything. I just didn't like this movie very much.
Well, of course, the real disappointment of this year is that no one went and saw Star Wars: The Last Jedi.
Nobody saw that
movie.
Not at all.
No.
One movie I want to give up. There's a couple of ones I want to give quick shout-outs. One, this is underrated. Have any of you seen Brawl in Cell Block 99?
No, but that's like next in my Netflix queue.
Yeah, this is
that's really good.
Yeah, it's a Vince Vaughn movie. It's sort of, he goes to prison for a bad drug deal. And basically, the same drug dealers he botched the deal on, like, kidnap his wife, and they say, we're going to kill her if you don't take out this guy who's in a prison. But the thing is, the whole story is The guy that he's got to take out is in this maximum security prison, so he's got to build himself a reputation as this troublemaker to get into this maximum security cell. It's just sort of how it's sort of a character arc, how downward he spirals, how he's not really a bad guy in the beginning, but just how he's just got to get deeper and deeper in the dirt just to be able to save his wife. And it's good. I know, Professor Dutter, you like The Raid and all the action scenes.
Oh, yeah.
This isn't like The Raid where it's all quick, pop, pop, pop. This is all just slow, but just power, punch, and punch, like, Vince Vaughn.
Good. I'm in. Like I said, it's in my Netflix.
Yeah, it's extremely violent, so it might turn you away, but it's really, really good.
I'm okay with violence as long as it's not just for the sake of.
Yeah. And then one more I want to talk about. It just came out. I'm not sure if this is underrated because on Rotten Tomatoes, it's now the best reviewed film of all time on Rotten Tomatoes. Have you seen Paddington 2 yet?
No, but I did think I might want to see it in the theater, so I did go to Netflix to watch the first one.
Have you seen it, Professor Dutter?
No, I haven't. I've heard it's really good.
It's really good. I didn't have much interest in it, but on a whim, I saw the first one, and I really liked it.
I liked it.
I loved it. And this is another great one. I think what really stands out for me this one is the directing, just because like even the first one, it's kind of a bit of Wes Anderson-ish, where he just does so much experimentation. Like there's this whole scene where it's like shot in like a pop-up book, like how in his imagination, like a pop-up book with his Aunt Lucy. And it's a sweet movie. It's really sweet, great with the kids. It's funny. We could talk a little bit the next one. Sally Hawkins is in it. And there's a lot of stuff where she's swimming and she's going underwater. So you're obviously, if you watch it, you're going to be thinking of The Shape of Water a lot. But
speaking of The Shape of Water, with 13 nominations, it sounds like they're trying to push it as
Best Picture.
Best Picture. What do you think?
I hope not.
I liked it.
I
enjoyed it, but I didn't put it in my top 10. There's just a lot of films that I think are better than it.
Either of you seen Mudbound?
Mm-mm.
Yes.
What did you think of that?
I thought it's been a while since I've seen something try to be so Faulkner.
Oh, that is a perfect way of putting it.
And I appreciate that because I love Faulkner. And the cinematography is in it great, is great, and there are some truly despicable characters in it, but it's so over the top with who's bad and who's good, even though it's obviously a situation that often happened in the South. And of course, the scene where the one friend has to choose make a really significant choice that would affect the other person's life. I think it was good. I like to see, you know, companies like Amazon and Netflix putting out their own content, especially if it's going to be quality and it's going to be indie and it's going to reach people. So I liked Mudbound a lot. I wouldn't put it in my top 10, but I would say, you know, it's a good movie to check out.
I'm glad it at least was nominated for a original song so that people will, you know, people who don't know about it will at least give it a shot.
Mm-hmm. And well, and wasn't Mary J. Blige up
yeah,
there?
Yeah, I got a few nominations.
Was.
Yeah, but you know what? That's another head scratcher for me because I was like, she's not in it very much.
She can't possibly beat Allison Janney for I, Tonya.
Oh no. But even then, like you know, we've seen in the past where sometimes these supporting nominations where they're only like maybe in the movie for 6 minutes or 18 minutes. And I just didn't think she had a really huge impact on what happened, other than she kind of was the main. There's two main links between the families, the two guys that went off to fight in World War II, and her being the kind of working in the house of the white family. So that's kind of the main point of crossover for the two stories, but. Yeah, I mean it's a good movie. I hope people do take the time to check it out because it's an interesting story.
Oh, one more I want to add. Have you seen Three Billboards?
Yes, I love
Great
Three
movie.
Billboards.
Oh my gosh! Okay, that's my number one.
Oh, okay. I think this is like remember when you first pitched this to me? You said this is McDormand's best role ever, even better than her role in Fargo, which is like, oh, I don't know about that. But it's great. Now, what I like about it is how her character, they sort of make her out look like she's this badass and, you know, she's not taking no for an answer and you want to root for her, but you realize her actions still have consequences. Like, the thing is, when she, spoiler alert, but when she burns down that police station, she almost kills Sam Rockwell. So it's like, she's badass, she's not taking anything, but she's still hurting some people who really don't deserve it.
But in terms of acting, I mean, I have to give it to her for looking that bad in that movie.
No, she's tough looking. She's got like the
Oh, yeah.
Auto mechanic suit with the bandana.
But the dirty hair. I mean, when she goes on the date with Peter Dinklage, she doesn't even brush her hair.
Mm-mm.
She totally does not care about how she looks, which is so refreshing. And she's such a great actress. It's just wonderful that she is that comfortable with the character to be negative and unattractive and memorable.
Yeah, and her, and then I think Sam Rockwell has like one of the best character arcs mm-hmm. I've ever seen in a movie.
Hated him at the beginning, really liked him at the end. Took me by surprise.
And Professor Dutter,
everybody in that is doing a great job. All the way down to, I don't remember what the actor's name is, but the guy that owns the signs.
Yes.
Caleb Landry Jones, you know, that's his name.
And wasn't he in Get Out?
Yeah, he was also in Get Out.
He was the brother
in
Get Out.
Yeah.
Speaking of Get Out, this is my prediction for Best Picture. It will go to Dunkirk, but it should go.
Really?
It should go to Get Out or Call Me By My Name, By Your Name. And the reason I think Call Me By Your Name is it's a dark horse here is because in some ways it's a foreign film. You know, half of it's in Italian with subtitles. And most people, that puts people off. So to have elevated it there when I thought it actually might fit in Best Foreign Film, it just makes me wonder if they're singling it out. What do you think?
I didn't like that movie.
What's your will win, should win?
Go ahead, Alex.
Oh, for me, maybe I'm a bit of a cynic when it comes to the Oscars, so I feel they always give Best Picture to like the safest movie. I'm gonna go with The Post,
okay?
Because it's like Spotlight, but instead of like priest molesting child, it's about Watergate, or not Watergate, but the Vietnam Papers,
the Pentagon Papers.
Pentagon Papers. So I think that's what's probably gonna win. What should win, even though it wasn't even nominated, was probably Blade Runner 2049.
Okay.
So that's my pick.
I would say. Because there's such a positive message that comes out of Three Billboards. I mean, I'm really glad, actually, that Woody Harrelson got a Best Supporting Actor nomination. Because I thought he did great in that movie, too.
Yeah, he did.
But, you know, this whole notion of, you know, you just need love. That's what's you just need love to you know, to be a better detective and be a better human being. And that's such a great message for right now.
Mm-hmm.
Any time, really, but right now especially. That I can see where people would go ahead and vote for that. I think what's probably going to win, which baffles me, is Shape of Water.
Hmm.
Well, tell me why you dislike.
I mean, it was good, but not like great.
Yeah,
I don't know why Guillermo del Toro won Best Director. That really floored me.
It does. I think it's the last one I would choose on that list for Best Picture.
Oh yeah, I mean but I think because it's so quirky and so different, and it was such a passion project for Guillermo del Toro. I don't know. I think a lot of people might just go ahead and do that. I can see Alex's point about choosing something important like The Post, and really, I think. You know, that movie was almost kind of like studio in its manufacturing, how we have to package every single thing that's going on in culture today into the story, from like the women that are lining the stairs when they're coming out of the court, and how that's just so uplifting for her to be in this position of controlling the paper and everything. So I get it, and Alex, you might be right, but
I'm a bit of a cynic.
They might
so.
Just go for something weird.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, Call Me By Your Name has a message about love. But why didn't you like
bought,
it?
I never bought the relationship between those two guys. I
really?
Because
I
never
totally
saw
did.
What Armie Hammer saw in the younger kid. The younger kid was just a young, punk, upstart. That likes music. I did not buy that relationship, and the whole movie was about the relationship, so I didn't buy the movie very much. It's a beautiful movie.
See, I totally bought the relationship, and what I liked was that it snuck up on me, because when the young man, when Armie Hammer shows up, I just assumed he seemed like he was the father's peer. I didn't really pay attention to him at first, kind of like you would if you had a house guest, but it wasn't your guest. And I love how the professor got the great speech in there about
Michael Stuhlbarg. Yeah, he did great. He's in like 17 movies this year.
He's terrific. But I found it very believable, and I completely understood why the young guy looked up to the older guy. I agree with you that I couldn't understand at first why he would be interested in this young boy. But the more you get to know the young boy, you realize it's just one of those inexplicable things. You don't pick people. It just sort of happens to you. And then you have to figure out, well, I mean, on the spectrum, am I really into men? Am I into women? Am I into both? They're both young enough to be trying to figure it out. I thought their conversations together were very well written. I found them very believable. And at the end, and I don't think this is a big spoiler alert, but in the end, one of the characters is looking at not really looking at you, but facing the camera, crying. Meanwhile, all around him in the background is life going on. People setting tables, talking, clattering of cutlery. And they hold that shot for the longest time.
Yeah, it's a great
time.
Ending sequence for the credits. I will give it that.
Really, really, very powerful. I just sat there and cried with them. And I felt like that was what you were supposed to do. It was like I had a one-on-one, like, experience. And I was experiencing what he was experiencing. So he's crying, I'm crying. I just thought it was such a powerful story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just couldn't buy it. I mean, I like that director. Like, I loved A Bigger Splash. I thought that movie was incredible and was one of my favorite movies of that year. And so I was really, really excited for this one because I'm like, oh, I love this last one so much. I can't wait to see this one. I just thought it was really kind of tepid.
I also liked looking at Armie Hammer. He's a very attractive man. That was not bad.
Yeah. Okay, we are running a little bit short on time, so I would like to wrap this up a little bit by having everyone give their top tens. So, who wants to start first?
I only have a top five.
Yeah. Sure, you can go ahead with that. I won't be that
okay.
much of a stickler.
So, number one, Three Billboards. Number two, Phantom Thread. Number three, Molly's Game. Number four, Loving Vincent. Number five, Disaster Artist.
Okay. And Professor Westhaver?
I only have eight.
Go ahead.
And they're in no particular order, but I will say my top one is Loving Vincent. But also on the list is Get Out, I, Tonya, Baby Driver, The Big Sick, Three Billboards, Molly's Game, and All the Money in the World.
Okay. And then I did a top 10. So number 10.
Overachiever.
I'm overachiever. number 10, I did Get Out. Number 9, I had The Florida Project. Number 8, I had Three Billboards. Number 7, I had Baby Driver. Number 6, I had It Comes at Night. Number 5, Paddington 2. I know that's a big surprise, but that movie's so charming. Number 4, A Ghost Story. Number 3, Dunkirk. Number 2, Blade Runner 2049. And then number 1, Good Time.
All right.
No, probably.
Where's Roman J. or Israel Esquire on that list?
Oh, I haven't seen that one.
I haven't seen that. Is that good?
Is that any good?
No, but I'm just wondering, like, why is Denzel Washington nominated as Best Actor for that? No one saw that movie.
It's probably because he's Denzel.
And the critical response to it was, like, something like a 49% on Rotten Tomatoes. Why?
Because he's Denzel.
No, that's not fair.
Now, you know, I think I would also add Coco on my list of top 10.
Yeah, Coco is nice.
Not as good as Paddington 2, but I think.
But you haven't seen Coco.
I know. I'll have to see it sometime.
We'll have to have a movie off. We'll have to see which wins.
All right. All right. Well, I'll wrap this up a little bit. So the last question I'll have is just tell everyone, tell me about your classes, what you got coming up this semester.
Well, I'm doing Intro to Film and American Cinema and World Cinema, and I will be trying to pull in stuff from these movies in the spring.
Okay. Professor Dutter?
I have a Humanities 101 online and a Intro to American Cinema on Fridays, and I hope, maybe, Film 101 on Wednesday evenings.
All right.
So people should sign up for it because there's only 5 people in it right now.
Okay. Well, that wraps up this episode of the Armchair Directors. We have been doing a year in review of 2017. Don't forget, you can listen to the Armchair Directors every Thursday at 9:30 a.m., Sunday at 2:30 p.m., or anytime at dragondigitalradio.podbean.com under the category Armchair Directors. Professor Westhaver, Professor Dutter, I want to thank both of you for coming on the show today.
Thanks for having me.
Right.
And Mary.
Yeah.
Okay. For the Armchair Directors, I'm your host, Alex Baker, saying, could you give us some change, please? The doctor said we have asthma. We have to eat ice cream right away.